Good morning. You are tuned in to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph and the show Books for Breakfast. I'm Peter Bradley. Today on the show, we've got Amy Lockhart and Mark Bell coming in, two artists new to town, both published through Drawn and Quarterly. Amy Lockhart is primarily an animator, but also dabbles in all sorts of, probably more than dabbles, in all sorts of graphics, arts, and stuff. Drawn and Quarterly recently published Pure Pajamas by Mark Bell, a phenomenal collection. Before that, Hot Potato. Both of them do phenomenal work, and Dan and I are thrilled to have them in on the show in just a little while. You're tuned in to Books for Breakfast.
Yes, I'm in love with you. Yes, I'm in love. And my dream time is not yours. Let me have it sometime sooner. Let me, my song line is on course. Let me into yours first, into yours.
Hello, you're tuned into Books for Breakfast.
Boom, it's Peter Bradley and Dan Evans. We need that back. Oh, Peter, it's nice to be here.
I'm Danny. For I breakfast. The same. All right. Oh, geez, what's happened?
Well, we're romancing each other and the world. Well, it's a romantic time in the world, you know. The listeners out there must know that I work in a bookstore, and they must know that you work there too, even though you don't get paid. This week we had, in the bookstore, we had an author come through for the Four Fridays in Guelph, Ontario. There's a program similar in Hamilton and similar in Toronto. It's about basically an art crawl. And we had a writer in town this week for the art crawl, Crystal Thornell, and she was here for her book. It was kind of great to have someone just lingering in the store. It made me remember that you can interface with writers and artists on a very informal level. It was great. You know, you don't have to set it up as a reading. It doesn't have to be by invitation. But but that's my segue into something else, which is by invitation. Next Thursday, there's a pretty great event in town. And it actually starts as a public lecture on Wednesday. We should pitch both of them, but do you know anything about Matthew Stadler? Have you been reading about this guy?
He's the like independent press
publication studios
guy.
He's inspired a lot of people. You know, remember we were chasing down the Books Bakery, that little Toronto unit? So that was inspired by Matthew Stadler. That's one of his. That's the Toronto branch of Publication Studios, and he's got, similarly to the sort of McSweeney's empire, the 826 stuff that spreads out over the world, these publication studios have spread out into about five places. He calls them pop-up bookstores. Matthew Stadler is very interested in the future of publication, but also in the future of retailing books. So he thinks one of his main things that I really fastened onto is he thinks publication is as much about the making of a public, rather not just the making of a source book, but the making of a public as well. So, you know, a book passes through, say, a book club or something, passes through hands, passes through minds, all the people who read it. And every time it hits a new person, it extends the public that has built around this source. So Matthew Stadler is really interested in things like, you know, public domain books or digitally available books that other people can read online, but that he can also make into really quickly made but beautiful editions. So sometimes he'll just print them out on a nice laser printer, slap a big bar of glue along the spine and wrap it in an old file folder, you know, and put his little stamp on it. And then there's a nicely bound, or, you know, a decently bound, nice book. and you end up with a sort of an instant publication. And that's this thing that he's marketed all over the place. Anyway, he's coming to town to talk about, I'm sort of butchering his ideas. They're much more complex. But, you know, in the coming future with is the future always coming? No. No. In the past future, that's also still coming, and in the present, we will have Matthew Stadler here on Wednesday to talk about digital books, the future of publishing, ways that people can maybe make money out of selling books, you know, or one of his other ideas is that the bookstore is just a landscape for where literary things can happen. It doesn't have to be the place where you buy books. It can be the place where you rent space, or you spend $10 to come in and browse all the magazines or something like that. So that's at the Guelph Youth Music Center on Wednesday night. Thursday is the 7th. There's a
you win this round.
A private yes. Oh, my arm is sore. the private dinner is at 44 Suffolk Street, and there are invitations floating around, but you can pick something, information or an invitation or a ticket up at the bookshelf. And so this is where Matthew takes his idea and actually puts it into a dinner party situation. So people at this dinner party are going to be reading one text called Revolution, and they're all going to be talking about it. And the idea is sort of like a live annotation of this text. So if anybody wants to check that out, that's the easiest way to get through that is the bookstore.
And we just had Mark Bell and Amy Lockhart's stroll.
Yay!
It's
like we needed a drum roll or something.
We can have one.
Okay, you know. Let's have one.
Sound effects,
okay.
Like the morning show thing?
Yeah, they don't come on promptly, but if the listener will permit a short delay, let's start with a slide, go into a drum roll, and I'm thinking we could end with a thunderclap and an explosion. And
Amy then Lockhart,
rimshot,
Mark
cymbal, dragnet, we've got them all here.
Just in case. That was actually Peter's sonic representation of your work. Put into one pot. Well, why don't we pick
we
a tune?
We need more.
Why don't we pick a tune? There's some music, and we'll come back with artists Mark Bell and Amy Lockhart.
That sounds good.
You're tuned into Books for Breakfast on 93.3 FM in Guelph.
Show me the place where you want your slave to go. Show me the place I've forgotten, I don't know. Show me the place where my head is bending low. Show me the place where you want your slave to go. Show me the place. Help me roll away the stone. Show me the place. I can't move this thing alone. Show me the place where the word became a man. Show me the place where the suffering began. The troubles came, I saved what I could save. A thread of light, a particle away. But there were chains, so I hastened to behave. There were chains, so I loved you like a slave. Show me the place where you want your slave to go. Show me the place I've forgotten, I don't know. Show me the place where my head is bending low. Show me the place where you want your slave to go. troubles came, I saved what I could see. A thread of light, a particle away. But there were chains, so I hastened to behave. There were chains, so I loved you like a slave.
That was newish Leonard Cohen here on Books for Breakfast.
Kind of beautiful.
Yeah, it's a pretty album.
It sets the mood, doesn't it? So we're joined in studio today by artists Amy Lockhart and Mark Bell. And we've never done a sort of a scrum interview like this before. So And I also know that, you know, you guys have definitely carved out individual personas in the art world, but you've also worked together a lot. So maybe we'll start talking individually to you, but please feel free to jump in back and forth.
Does scrum mean two people?
Multiple people.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, more than one.
Okay.
And then we'll focus on, I know you both have new-ish work out that I'd like to talk about, but then maybe we can also just talk about collaboration and the spirit of collaboration. So Amy, maybe we'll start with you. I know you're a filmmaker and a videographer and an animator and a painter and a bookmaker, et cetera, so many things. I think I came across your work first in Dirty Dishes in 2009, Drawn and Quarterly put out what was kind of like almost a container for a bunch of your different work.
Yeah, I make like little picture zines. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I make little picture zines. So it was sort of a collection of all the stuff in there. And it was actually edited by Mark Bell. I'm not sure if that's anywhere in the book, but he so kindly helped me put it together and organize it. And yeah, it was just a collection of a whole bunch of stuff. There were some comics in it, but a lot of it was just drawings and paintings and stuff like that.
It's beautiful. If we're going to give listeners who don't really know the Amy Lockhart world a little taste of what you do, let's say, can you give us some of your icons and some of the creatures and characters that show up?
Ladies in profile.
Ladies in profile, usually their tongues hanging out. And then
Big foreheads,
big necks. And sort of creepy cute is a lot of the way it's described. And then line drawings, ink line drawings. I used to do more cross-hatching. And then also acrylic painting that's sort of like somewhere between flat and bad illusionistic rendering. and hands with pointy fingernails.
I love the fingernails, yeah. Sharp, often bright red fingernails. Yeah. And the hands often come off, right? They come off their arms or...
Oh, yeah, and the hands will be cut off or stuff like that. I'm looking at the Naugadot.
Naugadot, yeah. Sure. Yeah, if you want a prop.
Weird muscly men. That's another one. And lots of portraits of ladies.
I kind of love your muscles, actually. Your characters all seem like they're affected slightly differently by gravity.
Yeah. You know?
The tops of their bodies are sort of less affected by gravity, and the bottoms are more compact and strong. So where do some of these creatures come from? Are they just what you see when you close your eyes? Or is
the ladies, I started drawing this lady in profile. It was from a label of an old doll that I found at a thrift store, and it was just sort of that nice mix of graphic representation and bad illusionistic representation, you know, like kind of off drawing basically, that I really liked. And so then I just was really drawn to that, and then I just kept redrawing that profile, and then I would be drawing, and I would just keep drawing these profiles of these ladies, and then sort of build up a stable of characters that I will reuse, and then I use them in my animations, and it's sort of like it keeps going back and forth. Like I'll build characters that I draw and then use them for my animations, or draw stuff for the animations that I put in books later, like, and then paint stuff and do paper sculptures of stuff. So it all, like, it's these characters that just flow through the
and ultimately you've built stuff up, this vernacular, right? This,
yeah.
This vocabulary of your own.
Yeah.
I love the hands. I love the hands in the book work. They're usually kind of off camera, or they're coming in, they're intruding from outside. And in the video work, you've kept that true, right? They come to
invade
from above, or grow out of the ground or something.
Yeah.
When did you start? So you started as an illustrator. When did you start sort of making your illustrations into animations?
I think it happened sort of at the same time. Like, I was in art school at NESCAD. Like, I've always drawn all that stuff. And art school at NESCAD. And then I started taking an experimental animation class with Helen Hill. So I started, and this was on when it was easier to do animation on film than video, way back in the 90s, I think.
Like scratching right into it?
No, filming directly on film. Like, I was doing stuff on 60mm film under the camera, like, so an Oxberry stand, that sort of thing. And then she was teaching her techniques, which were cutouts and some paper puppets. So these were all techniques that made it, like, less labor, so you weren't spending, like, 5 years to make a 30-second film sort of thing.
Oh,
like, just sort of, like, her idea was that you just need a good idea to make a good film, not all the, you know, razzle dazzle. So it was just getting it done and using cutouts and stuff like that. So I started with that and doing little cycle drawings and very, very simple stuff. And then I met Mark and saw what he was doing with his friends Pete and everything, collaborative drawings and making these. I'd made zines before with, you know, punk riot girl stuff like that,
yeah,
you know.
But, and in your printed matter class.
Oh, and in my printed matter class with Gary Kennedy, but
at NESCAD,
yeah. And then, but it was all, you know, lots of text and a little bit of drawing. And then that was the first time I had seen books that were all just drawings. So I was like, wow, kind of blown away. And then I got involved with that stuff. So
it gives so much permission, doesn't it? To even. I have very little artistic talent, but I like to doodle and draw. And you see a book, especially some of the stuff you and your pals have done, Mark, and it gives you such permission to just screw around on your own, just watch
them.
Yeah, because you don't have to make that many of them. You just make like 5 of them or something.
And them out.
Or are we going to... Okay.
No, you can keep it in the middle, yeah. We're fiddling with the mic.
Yeah.
So your films are... I mean, you said somewhere in there, just make a good film.
Just takes a good idea to make a film.
And it's true. I'm totally captivated watching your animations. And yet, they're not always immediately apprehensible. You know, you don't always understand what the storyline is, if there is one. There's creatures eating other creatures. There's lots of tears, amazing sounds, sometimes babies, people kind of explore it. Maybe even transforming, creatures that are transforming right on the screen.
The Walk for Walk one, I guess, is the one that's the most like that. And then that one's just, I wanted to create, I think I was always going back and forth between really absurd, non-narrative, and then... which was one of my first ones. Then I'd go to one that was like, I think that I want to make something more meaningful and not hide behind absurd, which was like The Devil Lives in Hollywood, which was sort of like a rant on culture and commodity fetishism, or I don't know what it was about, and hamburgers. And then and then back and forth, you know. And and then Walk for Walk is, I wanted to just make it no language, really accessible, and just not be stuck on like a story of then this happens and that's solved and then this, you know, so just sort of out of nowhere. And it was a lot about like morphing backgrounds and just taking all these characters I had and it just happens, like they are just walking, stuff just happens, you know, like that sort of thing.
Yeah, so okay, well that kind of answers one of the questions I was going to ask you, if you script them out with full stories, or if you just sort of, is there a bit of improvisation that's going on?
For the one we did together, The Collages, which was, I guess, one of the most recent ones, That was unscripted. Like, there was a basic idea, but I was just moving cutouts and puppets under the camera, and I was developing the story as I went along. But previous to that, they'd all been pretty scripted, because, especially Walk for Walk, because, which seems like, I think, the loosest one, but all the backgrounds are morphing, so every scene was like, okay, this scene, then that scene. Like, it was all pretty storyboarded. But within it, I could, you know, maybe this character walked before that one. You know, yeah. Like, there was, like, little yeah. bits.
And you really had to plan just to make the puppets, right, pretty much?
Plan to make the puppets?
You had to make so many plans.
Yeah. Because they weren't the collagist one. Okay, there's some that are hinged paper puppets, like a hand. And then I'll make that puppet, and then I can move it anywhere I want to. And then there's the Walk for Walk, which were it's replacement animation. So I drew a whole walk cycle, which would be like 32 drawings, and I traced it on cutouts. So it's all fixed. All their positions are fixed, so I can only really use them in one way.
Okay.
You know?
Oh, frame by frame, hey?
Yeah.
Wow, amazing. Do you have a method that you prefer? I mean, you're doing a lot of different stuff.
I think I'm going more towards the puppets, because there's more flexibility, and it's, you know, it's actually like working. Oh, I can just place this character here, and, you know,
yeah,
and then because the other one's more fixed.
Okay, and you've been working on a movie about your Dizzler character.
Yeah. So you mean
hinged puppets, right?
Hinged puppets is hinged. What did I say?
Yeah, I don't know. But the hinged
sometimes
puppets, you can just do whatever you want with them. Whereas though in the Walk for Walk,
it's fixed replaceable cutouts.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
The Dizzler is more. I'm gonna be doing it with hinged puppets and then some cutouts. So yeah.
And that's you. Can you? Do you want to talk a little bit about Kickstarter or what?
Oh, I mean, sure.
Kind of a neat project.
So I did fundraising on Kickstarter, which is this American fundraising. But anyone can use it. Fundraising website. And then the project, it's based on this comic I did for the Gansfeld issue, Japanada, which was a bunch of Canadian... Gansfeld is an art magazine, or was an art magazine. And it was a bunch of Canadian artists and Japanese artists. And then my little segment for it, I had a comic that I based on the Dazzler. So it was my own weird take of it. And she's a pop star, and she's coming back to her hometown to have a comeback concert, and then all these shenanigans happen. And then so I'm just taking that story and just fleshing it out a bit more, and more shenanigans. And then I really want to get into more script writing. Like I you know, took some script writing books out of the library, and then just to really get on that and do that, get on that train of the story.
It's going to be a short feature, right?
Yeah, short feature. Because, you know, I'd always just had, like, weird narratives or, like, gone around the narrative, you know?
But
so I just wanted to
Just so
to
you
do
know,
it.
I always pick up, even in the Walk for Walk, I do have story. I mean, the viewer can
Yeah,
make
you just
a story,
make it, yeah.
Right? There's always story in your,
yeah,
in
yeah,
your work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This one I want to be more, this is intentional, and I'm trying, and I'm following the rules of a movie. Like, everything's introduced within the first 10 minutes, and, you know, like, almost like work with the formula. And
sure.
That sort of thing, just...
Subvert it from within.
Yes, subvert it from within, yeah.
Okay, well, it's great to have you here. I think we'll go to a song, and then maybe we'll bring Mark in, and then after that we can talk a little bit about collaboration. Thanks, Amy.
Bushala!
We should talk about me a bit more. I'm just joking.
Yeah.
Yeah, boy, I'm a go-getter. Sorry that I left you in the cold, no sweater. I don't fall for the hoes and the pressure. Too much overload for your senses. Go ahead, take your pose in your senses. I'll be on a roll, rock and roll, getting senseless. When y'all gon' come to your senses. Recognize real in the field, in the trenches. Guess they don't know better. Here for a minute, but the music's forever. Trying to grow old, blow cheddar. With my people that I keep close center. And I school y'all, professor. If you pull a tough cock, pro wrestler. Never go against the grain and the texture. Show love and expect no lesser.
Books for Breakfast on CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. Thanks for tuning in. We're here with Amy Lockhart and Mark Bell, and we just had a little chat with Amy, and I think we'll move over to Mark Bell, illustrator, cartoonist. In about 2009, Drone and Quarterly collected a bunch of your stuff in a big, beautiful book called Hot Potato, and then just last year, this is much more a collection of previously published zines and books, right, in Pure Pajamas,
yeah.
Who's also one of your sort of great characters. And this is about 2004, Naga Dodd, and this is
yeah.
And this is an amazing compendium of kind of you and your ilk. Amy's in here, Pete Thompson, Jason McClain.
Yeah. And
also, we don't let me forget to to get to your newest. You handed me this at the Guelph Zine Fair just recently. Melamine Carbom is Mark Connery's new collection of illustrations, and Mark Bell is the publisher. Editor of this. So I don't know, let's start in the same way that we started with Amy. If we're going to try and give a kind of a rundown of your vocabulary of creatures and your world, how would you characterize some of the things that you do? I mean, you're often a character in your books. Mark Bell is often a character.
Yeah, I used to be, I guess, like I used to put myself in my comics way back in the 90s, but then that sort of, I guess in the 2000s, it sort of I sort of stopped putting myself in there.
Different character?
I don't know. I mean, just a whole bunch. I don't know. I think my comics kind of changed around 2000, I think. They sort of changed.
I think so, too.
And then
dimensions and...
Yeah, and then I sort of moved into making more artwork kind of stuff, like standalone stuff. So things got more complicated because when you do artwork, you don't have to draw the same character over and over again. So one character can be really dense or can stand very still. Whereas with comics, you have to kind of keep it moving, and you have to kind of fit a lot onto a page. So
right, in fact, it's.
I mean, my stuff's dense at the, you know, my stuff's just kind of dense, but then I guess it got denser.
I absolutely agree. And the denser the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
your older strips with Shrimpy and Paul and some of the other characters, as you say, they actually depended on a sequence, right? They depended
sort
of four panels or eight panels and a story being told over a sequence. But now. And please jump in here and correct me if I'm wrong, but now you almost have these fold-out, multi-page maps, you know, and it's one one image, but the viewer or the audience can sort of...
They're kind of like diagrams in a strange way, I guess.
So what's going on there? Walk us through that. What was the difference? Did you have to start with sequence to understand your own
Maybe.
Art?
Maybe. I mean, the art probably wouldn't exist the way it does without having done a lot of comics, right? I mean, that's so much... So that stuff's so informed from comics. I don't pretend, oh, I'm doing my artwork now, and it, you know... But I guess there was some in-between stages. Like, I did this strip called Gustin, and it's in that Hot Potato book. But anyway... It's sort of, I was trying to do something that was sort of halfway in between comics and a diagram. Like, literally, I was consciously trying to do that. So, I guess that was kind of an in-between point. It wasn't like it just sort of, it was a conscious effort on my part. But then the art, I guess, just ends up that way just because it's so informed by comics and informed by being on the grid and trying to fit a lot of information in. I guess also comics is about trying to give people or traditionally it's kind of about giving people a bang for their buck or something. So I figure with these drawings, I'm trying to fit a lot in there to make it interesting. It's this strange combination of that impulse and I guess, what is that term? Horror what is it, horror vacui, or what is that? I don't know how you say it.
Oh, I don't know it. That's a good
one. Oh, it's a kind of a condition someone might have where they obsessively fill up space. Like someone asked me, oh, do you have horror vacui? I think I'm not sure how you say it, so anyway.
But I don't think you do, because you leave... Maybe it's in an eyeball or inside a mouth or inside a box that opens into another box, but you often have blank spaces in.
Oh, yeah. No, it's true. No, I'm exaggerating. But, you know, yeah. No, I appreciate that. I mean, I see, like, I look at myself and I go, oh, there's still, like, I still look, see it as kind of formal the way it's designed usually, you know? Like, and often with the drawings, I'm trying to put a lot of white space in there to divide things so it doesn't turn into a bunch of mush. So it has more of, like, a formal setup that might have something to do with the way... I like how comics look, because comics have this look to them where the gutter, you know, the gutter in between panels has this sort of presence. So with the drawing, sometimes I'm trying to put distance between the objects, just probably to simulate some kind of gutter or some kind of visual effect that you get with comics.
Like a panel is panel.
Yeah, kind of.
And that does, in your newer stuff, how that works for me is it almost makes me think it's iterations of a couple of ideas. So I know that between panels in a comic there is a funny time shift, and the viewer has as much to do with that as the creator. But also in your sort of diagram and map work, it feels like there's lots of time travel, and yet there's no box, there's no line. Is that intentional, or are you...
Maybe. I mean, you mean just because there's I'm sorry, I'm not trying to...
Well, let's say, remember the can you picture the sort of the big two-page pullout in Hot Potato where there's almost letter creatures? They almost look like an alphabet.
Uh-huh,
all the shapes. And there's spaces between each of them. And you could almost imagine that's one iteration of something over time.
Oh, but, No, I understand what you're saying. Oh, yeah, totally, completely. Yeah, totally. So it's like kind of like lining things up.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes with the drawings, I'll draw like a light pencil grid to have that grid inform me, because I'll draw differently on this grid than I would if it was just totally free form, like instead of like just a blank page, because especially if you're dealing with a bigger page. So, and things are kind of lined up. It's almost like collections of things.
Okay.
Specimens? I don't know.
That's a good word, actually, because there's a lot of sort of biology in your drawings, I find.
It kind of ended up that way.
Cellular stuff.
Yeah.
Like peeled back layers of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I'll be walking down the street in Chinatown and see those diagrams of the feet for the... acupuncture, I'll be like, whoa, that is an amazing drawing. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
I don't
absolutely.
Know.
All the meridians and all the different...
And the color, yeah.
So that informs your work.
Like, I guess so, or it's just maybe I've just liked the visual look of that kind of thing, so it's... I haven't really, like, studied that stuff, but it just somehow ended up in there.
So let me go back just a couple steps here. You said, and I don't want to sucker punch you with this one, it's a tough one, but you said sort of comics are still at work in these larger diagrammatic things. Are you able to say what comics do, what the work of comics are, and how they're at work in these larger, sort of more contemporary drawings?
I'm not sure. I guess just because it's just a way of working, like you draw it in pencil, and then you put the ink on,
okay,
and then you color it. But then if you're putting it in a gallery, maybe you want to try watercoloring it to make it look more interesting. It's just these really pretty basic things. But, you know, when I first started doing those, I mean, I've done art all along. At the same time I was doing comics, I've made these art objects of different kinds and done the art drawing books and stuff. But when I was really consciously thinking, oh, I'm going to put some work in a gallery, I stopped drawing with this is getting a little technical, but I stopped drawing with a dip pen because I didn't want them to have that comics look. So I stopped penciling and I stopped using a dip pen, and I just used a deadline, like a rapidograph, just to give it kind of a different look, because I was conscious of trying to make a bit of a break with the comics. I didn't want it to end up looking too illustrate-y or something,
yeah.
I don't know if that's the right word. But then I found as I did more and more of this art stuff, exclusively, I found I could go back to my old techniques, and then I started coming up with a way to pencil first and then to ink, so in a way they kind of ended up going back towards comics, but in kind of a different way, but still informed by comics, like everything I do, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's okay, that's a great answer, that's fascinating. I thought you were going to come up with like a theory of the way time and character works in comics, but I like that better. It's much more practical.
You brass tacks.
And
it all is, really. People come up with all that other stuff, but it doesn't matter.
Well, you know what, Mark? The thing is, that is, you may be laughing at yourself, but you know, you open, you say Pure Pajamas to one of these pages, and it's true. People are smacked in the face with your total drawing, right? Whereas you see the process underneath. But what you see in a Mark Bell drawing, and it's true in an Amy Lockhart drawing as well, is gorgeous use of color, tons of lines, all these extra little marks that obviously mean something, but you know, how long does it take someone to look at every little hatch you make or every little, and you have a lot of text in your work.
Yeah.
You don't use as much text, do you, Amy, in yours?
No. It'd be sound, I guess.
Yeah, sound in yours. Yeah. But you do a lot of storytelling sort of in thought bubbles or in like labeling. You know,
yeah, for sure.
Like half wall.
Yeah, exactly. Because the comics are kind of, comics are essentially diagrams anyway, right? If you really, you know, if you kind of break it down. I mean, Chris Ware's stuff is very, his stuff's very much like diagrams, I guess. Mm-hmm. But so my comics are, yeah, my comics are even based in, I guess, diagrams too, right? It works both ways. So I'm using, yeah, I'm labeling and trying to use cross sections because I like how they look and over-emphasizing things, the obvious, maybe.
So there's this one thing that hangs over comics, and I actually think we're moving away from it, but, you know, juvenilia and kids sitting cross-legged under a ping-pong table flipping fast through, like, a Donald Duck cartoon, you know, something like that. I know we're sort of moving away from that idea of comics.
Yeah, and you can't put these in your back pocket because they're all hardcover.
Well, you can't flip through them either, can you?
So yeah, they're too expensive.
here's another sucker punch of a question then. How do you imagine your readers are reading your stuff, especially your contemporary stuff? Do you think they open the page and sit there with it for hours, sort of studying, like a Where's Waldo kind of?
Well, some people have said they're reading it slowly, like that. This book, someone said to me, "Oh, I'm trying to read it really slowly. I'm trying to savor it," but I guess maybe there's a lot to look at. So I'm not sure. I guess you could. Some people might be able to get into the thread of the stories, and then I imagine other people probably just would look at the drawings. They might be too baffled to actually read them.
Fair enough.
You know? I think it's...
Well, you can, especially the your sense of sort of, you know, the colors that sort of fade into the background and the sharper colors that come out at you. And you were talking about this sort of split in your drawing around the 2000s where, in my opinion, you got much more fine with your line.
Yeah.
And it started adding a lot more dimension, I thought.
Yeah.
I thought the Shrimpy and Paul days were deep already, deep panels, and there were lots of things. You know, I would look at every book or every item in the case in the background, or things that were left on the desk or something. Those were all important to the panel. But in your contemporary stuff, there's just these sort of abstract shake type lines or like movement lines all over the place, and it adds to the depth. So I feel like one of the big changes is that you went deeper in terms of perspective, deeper into the pictures. Do you agree with that? Or?
Yeah, I could see that for sure. I could see that. It might be, maybe I'm like my technically getting a little better at drawing, so the things I was trying to do, I could maybe convey them better. Maybe I can convey them better in a simpler way, possibly. I'm not sure. I appreciate what you're saying. I think you're right about like maybe kind of an abstract quality coming in a little bit, for sure.
Yeah. We're talking to Mark Bell, and we also have Amy Lockhart in the studio. We'll go to a song, but you guys are a couple. I don't know if everyone knows that. And so I thought maybe we could come back after the next song and talk a little bit about collaboration and what it means to live with another artist and how you
work. Therapy.
Thanks for being here, and thanks for tuning in to Books for Breakfast on CFRU 93.3 FM.
I accepted the risk origin, the half-bred soldier.
You're tuned into Books for Breakfast, and we have Amy Lockhart and Mark Bell in the studio. Thanks for joining us today. It's nice to have you here, pals. And you each have your own individual work. Mark, you've focused a lot on comics and illustration and the sort of the gallery and art side of your illustrations. And Amy, I know you're in school, and you've also got probably some drawings and sculptures in the background, but a lot of your work these days is animation and video. Mm-hmm. And you guys live together, and you have worked together quite a bit. What's the sort of, paint as a picture of like the inside of your lair, your sanctum. Do you share a desk?
No, we don't share. We don't share a desk.
No.
We are usually living in small apartments because we don't have that much money, and then usually we'll have one room. Someone gets a studio in a room, and then someone gets a studio in the main room.
In the living room. We just go back and forth.
And then Mark gives me a hard time because I make too much of a mess in the common space.
And so then I usually take the living room.
Mark, turn the radio down. I can't think. That's kind of like our.
It's kind of like that.
And then Mark chases the cat around, and I say, "Put the cat down."
Yeah, chase the cat around.
This sounds like creative plan. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So then, when you get down to work, and do you have a collaboration on the go right now between the two of you?
We don't really collaborate. We collaborate a little bit, but
I was about to say under the covers, and I was like, that's not the kind of show we're talking about. But no, I meant like
people are listening from under the covers.
Yeah, but more like more hidden. Like I'll be working on, like I have this another little side project, these Jessica animations that I'm working on, and then I'll have a base story, and then I'll be like, Mark, what should happen? And then Mark will say, oh, and give me like really good ideas that I'll steal and won't credit him for. You know?
Yeah, I'll say the baby should move around on the ground, and she can't catch the baby.
Yeah, yeah,
this,
really good.
No one would have seen that. That's not online,
so it's
right?
Like bouncing ideas off of each other and get it, you know, sort of thing, and then you'll, you know, I'll help you with your drawings, or it's just like a...
Yeah, I'll bother, like, thing. How's this color? How's this yellow?
What should happen in this
Does this
story?
Drawing have too much yellow in it? It's that, a lot like, of that. I mean, it's pretty banal stuff.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. Because there's probably a lot of artists who don't have anybody to bounce that off of. I mean,
no, it's just
so helpful. With
yeah,
stories, really too, it's so... Like, writing that Dizzler thing, I had some other people helping me, too. But it's so hard because it's like you're reading this thing and you're like, it makes sense to me, but I don't know if it makes sense. Or like, it's so... When you're stuck in it, you can't see it anymore, you know?
And sometimes we have to go to outside sources because, you know, people take each other for granted. So Amy will have to go to her friend who's... Well,
they'll...
or you talk to each other so much that sometimes it helps to get a source outside of that. Like, because Amy was getting help with a good friend of hers on her script.
Yeah.
Just to get even like another, like an outside source.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you guys have a pretty excellent group of friends. I mean, and I'm sure a bunch of them are in common. And you said, I'm going to go back a little bit, you said stealing. You used the word stealing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And this seems to be a thing among your group of friends. I mean, there's so much to say about that. In a nutshell, I'll say that a great example shows up in Naga Dodd, where, Mark, you actually have drawings passed back, almost shapes passed back and forth, or a couple of the artists in here have passed back and forth JFK prayer cards, you know, and really mark them all up in their own way. But it's the same base drawing that you're sort of elaborating on.
Yeah, and Pete Thompson started doing this thing where he would actually redraw people's books. So Jason would put out a book. He'd put out On My Brain, McLean. And then Pete would take it and redraw his own version and retitle it and do it drawing by drawing and redraw the drawings. And because that wasn't out of nowhere. It was because we were always kind of stealing little things from each other, little pieces of drawings and stuff, and working them into our own. And because we'd worked on drawings together so much, it had evolved out of that. So
is that a good way to learn, do you think? I mean,
I think so, definitely. Yeah, it's almost like this permission to steal, and then it kind of opens things up a bit and makes it interesting. I think it's a really good way to learn. So it's like it's like a competitiveness without the bitter feelings. Some might get a little upset, like, oh man, they took my this thing and made it so much better, and then you have to try and get it back or something, or come up with something better.
Have you two ever participated in any of those kind of like drink and draw type things where people get around and pass a drawing around? You know, you might start a mark and...
I don't know if I ever... I think I might have, but you've done more of those.
Yeah, like in Montreal in the 90s when I lived there, there was the comics jams there. And those are great, but the funny thing about those is I find sometimes there's too many cooks. Like, like, I think once you get more than three people, unless it's really controlled, it can turn into a real mess.
It's true,
and
yeah.
I think that's the danger, unless you have a real solid plan.
And probably there's a lot of different styles going into those.
Well, that's it, exactly. Like, yeah. That's it, exactly. I mean, there's been some good results, I mean, from some of those comic things for sure, but I think two's the ideal number.
Yeah, I've done it in smaller, in bigger ones I get too self-conscious too, like, oh, I'm at, you know, like,
Yeah.
And then in smaller ones, it's...
But just as an exercise to get together, I mean, those things are great. I tried to go to a couple of the drink and draw things, but they were done by the time I started trying to go when I moved here.
In time, you mean? Or, like, it was 12 o'clock in the morning and they were finished, or...
No, I think they stopped. I think they stopped.
Oh, really?
Oh, I don't mean to give them
a penny whistle or something?
Oh, that's too bad. I thought they were ongoing.
Well, one time I showed up and there was these kids there. There was five of these kids and they were leaving and they were going, oh, yeah, they didn't show up. It's not happening. I was like, well, there's five of you guys and you're young. Why don't you get something going?
Pens and paper.
Pens and paper. Yeah. You don't need us.
I also, I showed up to a few of those as well, Amy, and I had the same thing where I would get a piece, you know, and it had like, say a sad cloud on it or something, and I think like, what, should I put a rocket ship in there or should I put like a roller skate on it or something, and like I would just get about two lines drawn and then be like, okay, pass it on.
Too much pressure.
I'm passing on I've destroyed the drawing and nobody can add to it.
But that's the good part of it, that no one has to really take responsibility. Do you know what I mean? That's the great part about collaborations. I think that's like a positive thing, is no one really has to take like full responsibility for whatever gets done, so you can hide in the background, and even if you've ruined it, you just say, well, whatever.
No one takes responsibility.
Yeah.
So I've seen Shrimpy and Paul in a couple of your animations. Have you shared other characters? Have you?
Shrimpy and Paul had a cameo in
Little cameo. Was that Walk for Walk? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've taken some of Amy's characters and put them in Shrimpy and Paul. In the book Shrimpy and Paul, there's a few of Amy's characters, like Captain Beige. Remember, he's in there.
Oh yeah.
And there's another one. There's a few
then
little guys.
And the dream story. In this
one? Oh, well, you're in it. Amy's in
that
story.
Yeah, that's a great story.
Yeah, Amy's
you
in
dream
that
of,
story.
You dream of kittens with kittens.
Yeah.
And you dream.
Dream of cartoonist camp.
Oh yes, that's an excellent one. Okay, well, it's almost impossible to catch up with you guys. You've always got so many things on the go. But I think we should mention, Amy, you have a show coming up. Do you want to tell listeners about that?
Oh, yeah, I have a show of, it's going to be drawings, paintings, and sculptures in London, Ontario, Forest City Gallery. Coming up June 22nd is the opening, and then I'm going to give a little artist talk on the 26th, which I'm not sure what I'll do for that. I'll probably show some animations and just
Amazing.
Talk about stuff.
Yeah. And is that truly your first solo show?
No. I've done. I just had one in Sweden.
Amazing.
Sweden, Ontario. No,
it's right
just
near Paris.
Under Paris. Yeah. Berlin.
In Sweden in April, and then I've had other little solo shows. You know. Yeah.
Okay. And Mark, is there any main project that you're working on right now that you can talk about? Or?
Yeah, I'm trying to work on a book, some kind of comic story. It's coming along. I can't say too much about it, but okay. I'm working on it.
Are you two keeping your relationship with Drawn and Quarterly open? Is it still an ongoing relationship? Or?
Yeah, I would be very open to have them publish me, and I like Drawn and Quarterly.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As well? Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think, pretty much. I mean, I talk to them still. They talk to me.
We're still on speaking terms.
Still have their number in your cell phone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going with Drawn and Quarterly to Oslo next week. There's like a comics festival there. So there's some Drawn and Quarterly artists going there. So I'm doing that with them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's amazing. I like both of your blogs. I know yours is, you have a post from last week even. It's much more active. But
mine's.
That's okay. Dizzler's up there. Right?
Oh yeah, and Dizzler's up there. Yeah,
she has a cool blog. So do check Amy Lockhart and Mark Bell out online. We'll let you do your own digging. It's a real treat to have you here. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks
Best
for having
luck.
Us.
Yeah, thanks, Sam.
Yeah, that's just about it for us on the show today. I thought today that we would outro on this song, which. Maybe, do either of you recognize who might have crafted this?
Oh, that looks so familiar. Oh, is it...
Oh, that's really familiar.
Is that the guy that draws Tony Millionaire or not?
Oh, it's... Is that... Howie?
Yeah.
Howie.
All right.
But see, I looked at the... I looked at the... Because I knew Howie was in Nutsack with Sam Shalabi.
That's right.
And...
Oh, there's Sam right there. And these other people.
Howard Chakowitz we're talking about.
Howard Chakowitz.
Has a drawing on the back cover of the Nutsack.
Well, he's in the band. He drums for them. Drums? Is that
it? Yeah, I met... They were playing once when I was... When we were living last in Montreal, and I didn't make it. Yeah, it was my only chance, and I missed it.
I want so badly to see them. Anyhow, this is them covering my favorite things here on Books for Breakfast on CFRU. Thanks very much to Amy Lockhart and Mark Bell for coming in today on the show. And tune in again next week and every week. And go to booksradio.com to listen over and over again.